Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for the 2 o'clock transportation conversation here in Julius 11 at the CAR conference. I want to welcome everybody back. I'm going to lead this panel discussion with four auto transport business professionals: Joe Mercari, Midwestern Car Carriers; Dana Rogers of Pre-Owned Auto Logistics; Jose Delgado of Location Services; and John Robertson of Ship Your Car Now. Please give a hand for I also want to thank CAR Conference, Bobbitt Media, the NAAA, IARA, for the time they've spent with me on ATI, the CAR Shipping Business Channel, and for allowing me to moderate this panel today. My name is Jay Wurzberger. I created ATI, Auto Transport Intel, the purpose of which is to help further the transportation conversation across all verticals, not just within the obvious vertical of carriers and dispatchers and brokers. We seem to know many of the problems within transportation, and we want to share that information with the other verticals in automotive. So we know that evolution and changes in auto remarketing is front and center, but what about the importance of the role of transportation? Who does it? What are the moving parts? What's it cost? And of course, dude, where's my car? This is a transportation conversation, so I encourage you to take some notes of things you want to ask in the Q&A that will follow this session. But I'm going to open it up. I'm going to start with you, Joe Mercari. Managing volume, managing cost, accurate tracking. From point A to point B, it seems like maybe it should be a little simple to get it picked up and get it delivered. But how do you manage client expectations while managing cost and reality of transport in your business?
Yeah, it's two questions there. Managing cost is the one thing, and it's a huge aspect to what we do on the fleet side. When you're running a fleet, cost is front and center, especially right now. The dynamic nature of the way costs are running has been a real challenge. And then the expectation side, which is really client management. That's how do you interface with your clients? How do you interface with your customers, internal, external? A lot of people kind of forget that all the revenue in this whole equation starts with someone selling a car. So I found my experience just being real honest with the clients about what it is that you do and what you can do, and honest about what it costs to be able to perform that. That's always going to be the best way, as far as what we've seen.
Thank you, Joe. Dana, expectations versus cost and reality, how do you manage it?
Well, that is the question, right? So costs right now, costs were skyrocketing before this. Carrier availability has been very thin with the driver shortage. Now we've got fuel cost, insurance rates that are rising. So, cost is that variable that, what is too much, and what are the expectations to get it delivered right away, right?
Equipment, insurance.
So these carriers, yeah, they've got their hands full with the rising cost to operate.
Jose.
Well, I always tell them you could have it done right, you could have it done faster, you could have it done cheap, but they only get to pick two, right? So you just kind of try to manage the expectation that way. For us, also, it's a little bit different because we're moving maybe one car at a time. And so a lot of the guys that we use, we're able to, we also manipulate other business with the guys that we use for towing. So they really want to please us because they want to get more work and more volume. So it's about that personal relationship with the transporter to make sure that they understand the need in the SLA, but really it's the relationship with the lender also, your customer, because they have to understand that there's so many moving pieces that can and will fail within the process, whether a driver calls in sick, or whether the truck breaks down, or if there's traffic. Winnipeg, and each area of the country has its own challenges too, right? So it's just about communication, I think, is the most important part there.
Thank you, Jose. John?
I think Joe hit on a little bit, and I'll just build on that. The number one thing that we found is it's all about transparency. You've really got to understand your business. You've got to understand what the actual costs are associated with moving from point A to point B. And then you really need to communicate that directly to the client. And that might not always be good news. You know, they're used to paying $400 to move something from point A to point B, and this week it costs $525. You're not doing your client any favors by calling them and shyly saying, well, I hope I can get it done for $475 for you, and then not getting it done. You know, be upfront. Hey, Mr. Client, I'm sorry. It's 5 1/4 this week. I know that's crazy. That's the world we're in. You want to get it moved on a timely basis, let's get it moved. And just don't shy away. Be real.
And let me add to that, too. Non-communication, terrible approach. You know, remember that the person selling the car needs that car. You know, and if they feel like they're speaking into a vacuum, you're not long for this business. You know, so very important.
So, okay, great. So many things were identified here in that. You've got different types of clients, different types of costs, different regions. Pizza Tracker, it gets mentioned. We read about it. It seems like an easy idea. We have an easy transportation Pizza Tracker. Why not? Why don't we have an easy transportation Pizza Tracker, Joe?
I say all the time, you know, people ask, well, how come I can watch my box on Amazon go from here to here to here to here to here? Have you ever seen those guys sling that box on your front porch? You really want your $65,000 automobile handled that way? You don't. You know, you want that managed from, you know, with kid gloves. Transparency is very important, without a doubt, as we just said, but when you get to that level of data and detail, you know, you get to the point where you start micromanaging things. I think that's very dangerous. I think when you are balancing that efficiency of delivery against your cost, you know, that's when you are managing your expectations to your clients and your customers. So, you know, just going back to being transparent and being honest about how if I can deliver this in X number of days, I'm going to deliver it in X number of days and meet that expectation. That answers the question exactly.
Now I want to say this too, is that Joe, so you work a lot with new vehicle production volumes.
That's right.
And so you're able to look at the kind of scope where a Pizza Tracker gets pretty complicated.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of units a year. Multitude of origin points to a multitude of destinations, yes. I think we're a relatively small, mid-sized company, Midwestern is, in the Midwest, and I think we have something like 45,000 destination points that we service, you know, inside of our area. So it'd be very, very challenging to be able to track every single one of those pizza boxes across a network that large. You just do the best you can and try to work through that.
And yet the shipper, consigner, dealer, auction, they got to know something. What do they know today?
Well, I mean, in so far, you're putting together KPIs where you're managing all of that big data. You know, so, for example, I know that if I'm going to ship, let's say, 2,000 cars in a particular week, then I'm targeting my average ramp dwell by a certain metric. Let's say it's 3.5 days dwell time before it's dispatched from that yard, and then my average delivery time is usually 36 hours or less, depending on the length of haul. And so you take those KPIs and you try and find your manpower adjustments to be able to meet that service expectation. And then again, communicate that to the client and then go from there.
Dana, you work with a lot of dealers and carriers, and I know that one of the questions is, what kind of red flags do you think, from your experience, what information would you want to share? Education is a big part of our having a relationship and building a client base. What what is some education that you would want to share in today's marketplace that you think is important?
It's really helping set the expectation, right? And helping the customer understand how long it's going to take for something to be delivered and communicating when that's not going to happen or if it's going to happen sooner than that. So that takes a strong relationship with the carrier base to, you know, be able to get those answers in a timely fashion and set the expectation with the carrier alongside the dealer to make sure that everyone's on the same page. If something's not going to go right, you know, let's communicate it ahead of time rather than wait.
Do you do that with software, with people,
combination? So communication, right? You've got text, call, email, GPS, depending on what platform the carrier is on. So it takes all different forms of communication. And then, you know, integration to our dealer partners or our, you know, other vendors into their software so that they can see it, you know, firsthand in a timely fashion also.
Thank you, Dana. Jose, you work with many different verticals, auto remarketing, repossession, carriers. How would you answer that question as far as what would you like your clients to know more about in a general setting?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, right, that we don't lose any cars, right? We just kind of talked about that, right? We move 50,000 cars a year, and we move them multiple times. Although there's not a pizza tracker, kind of like what you were talking about, and I think we were talking a little offline on the pizza tracker, because these guys are contractors, they're not employees, and so keeping track of the pizza tracker isn't always available. These guys don't want to have the location services on their phones, or they don't want to be tracked that way. So I think just knowing that the car is being picked up and you get a notification for that, the car is in transit, you know that already when it gets delivered, maybe you get a notification. So instead of a pizza tracker, I think a notification device is probably the next best thing. And I think that we have that in a lot of the systems that we use. Communicating with the customer is obviously the key, but I don't even want to have a conversation with them on all 50,000 vehicles. I want them to be able to self-service. And I like for them to just get notified or get that email or get pinged so that they don't have to call and ask me. And you know, setting up those times appropriately is probably the most important thing.
John, you offer pricing options and integration for your clients through software. How do you keep it simple and sophisticated?
Can I say one thing about the GPS tracking?
I love it. Yes, please.
All right. So I think when people say that they're GPS, they want GPS tracking on vehicles or pizza trackers, that's like a really easy, gosh, if we just had that, the world would be better. We'd all know where the car is all the time. Well, guess what? That GPS tracker, I've got one right this minute. The car is 80 miles away from its destination, and it's supposed to be delivered today. And my sales rep says, Mr. Customer, don't you worry, we're only 80 miles out. That car will be there, probably within the next hour and a half, 2 hours maybe with traffic, no problem. Call the carrier, make sure he's down, parts are in order, he'll be there for 3 days. Oops, just told the customer the car was an hour and a half out. It's not gonna be there till Monday. You gotta be careful what you ask for. These GPS tracking is not a magic bullet, it doesn't work. Trucks go in different directions. It's not a UPS route. Auto haulers are not running the same circle every day, delivering to the same set of houses, not in most cases. And so when a customer, even if it's a dealer who understands the business or a marketing person who understands the business, sees a truck go 3 hours in the wrong direction, the panic button pushes. Well, to Jose's point, that doesn't matter. What matters is the delivery still scheduled to be on time? So are those updates going out to the customer? Is the update saying, yes, it was picked up? Is the update saying, yes, it's still on time? Is the update saying, oh, wait, Mr. Client, we just got news, and it's gonna be a day late. And guess what, I'm telling you 3 days ahead of time instead of the day after it was supposed to deliver. That's the important piece of this tracking stuff, guys, not the GPS. GPS is one small piece of the tool. We've tried it, we've used it. Amongst independent carriers, if you get a 30% adoption rate for them to keep that thing on and actually use it, you're doing great. Most people get under 20. So it's not a magic pill. You got to communicate with your carriers just like you communicate with your clients. You got to make sure you know where the vehicles are, what the anticipation points of transition are between pickup, delivery, on time, not on time, and communicate. So that's number one, Jay.
Great.
What was the question that I didn't answer?
Well, it was software, but I'm going to stay on the pizza truck for a second.
I'm kind of passionate.
Well, no, I love it. Me too. The pizza tracker is it's a perfect example of something that I think the industry thinks it's looking for, but it won't be so simple.
I'm a big fan of milestones too, and you know that gives the carrier and the customer a lot of comfort to know that the product is in motion, I think, and you know, to the point that things happen on the road, trucks break down, whatever. The other thing, one of the key points I wanted to bring up too, there are certain places that a 75 or 80 foot car carrier cannot go in the course of delivery. You know, there are road regulations and things like that that have to be worked around. So that factors into the way that we route our trucks when we're delivering. So that's another really important factor.
I'm envisioning a pizza tracker that will tell jokes at intermittent times when there's bad news. My, that was a low bridge.
It's not funny.
That is nothing to laugh at right there.
It's not funny.
I've replaced a few windshields. That's not funny.
Right. No, it's not. But can we incentivize carriers to turn on GPS?
Yeah, you know, sorry, jump in here, Jay.
Yeah.
In my experience, because we've been trying this for 2 years,
yeah.
Incentives are irrelevant. There's no amount of money that I can give to a carrier that he's going to turn that on. They're either going to do it or they're not going to do it. We've tried different levels of revenue. We've tried, you know, different priorities for loads. We've tried it all. And at the end of the day, they either have no issue with it because they're not worried about it, or it is an item that they are just not going to do.
And federal regulations also factor into this too. You know, the driver has a ticking time bomb. That is an electronic log device on every commercial, especially Class A CDLs. So you know they have a number of hours they can work in a day. They have a number of hours they can work in a week or a 7 day period. You know, and there's a lot of restrictions that go into that factor as well. So there are times when a driver will take a load and then have to park for 34 hours to do a reset because that's just what the DOT requires. So yeah, there's a lot of X factors in there that get in the way.
Yeah, sure. A 2 hour pickup. Versus a 15-minute pickup, now that affects the rest of the day for a driver, so they might not be on schedule after that. And all it takes is one instance that will throw them off for the whole day.
Rain, snow, traffic.
Paperwork's never missing, is it?
Yeah.
But with tracking, it really comes down to just communication, right? Which is, you know, text, email, phone, and relaying that information through, you know, technology or, you know, simple email, or depending on the customer, but it's a seasonal customer, maybe someone in their late 80s, it might be a phone call. You might need to actually pick the phone up and give them a call and just let them know that.
Right, that residence delivery.
So they don't sit at their house all day long waiting for that vehicle to show up, because they will sit at their house all day long and wait for that vehicle to show up.
And that's the challenge of Find a Mile Logistics. Another error, but I wanted to mention, yes, thank you, Joe, the complexity of trucking. Easily overlooked.
Is there ever a situation with you guys when you're hauling vehicles that a carrier, I mean, you said pizza tracker on the truck, but if he has to stop and offload a car and have another carrier come and pick it up and finish moving that car, really tracking that transporter isn't going to do anything if you're going to have multiple people touching the car.
Well, I wish I had my bell.
You didn't bring the bell.
I know. I thought about it.
Ding.
Just randomly say ding.
Well, nowadays, a lot of the customers have tracking in their vehicle. So, you know, they actually tell us sometimes where their car is. And because, you know, it's 80 miles from their destination, they are assuming they're receiving it today, and that might not be the case.
The Amazon driver doesn't have to rearrange the truck every time he stops.
It's a little more difficult than throwing a package at someone's front door.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
that is.
Sometimes the first one off is the one above the cab, which you're unloading the whole truck to get to.
Which there's been talks of software that will help a driver manage all that. thought. I haven't seen that software yet, but I've
seen it tried many times.
Yeah, I've seen it tried. Yeah.
I'll leave it right there.
It just, yeah, exactly. It gets really complex. So back to software, John. Pricing options and software integration for your clients, dealers, auctions, consigners, etc. How do you, I mean, I know you've got, this is, you're a big focus, right?
Yeah.
So please tell us more about what you focus on and explain how this helps.
Well, it's a little different business model, I think, overall. But when you look at the way that the pricing is set up, we actually, I mean, flat out copied Amazon, right? So Amazon has that option, right? You get to the checkout box and it's like, well, here's the Amazon shipping, and here's the $5 upgrade to get it by Wednesday, and here's the $10 upgrade to get it tomorrow morning. And you've got a choice of where you can make those selections. And so when we looked at the industry, we said, you know, the industry, for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different markets, and I love this room because there's everybody's in here has different reasons to get a vehicle from point A to point B. And sometimes saving money is the biggest reason, and sometimes getting it there is the biggest reason. And so by giving clients a variety of choices, though they choose their model, we're actually empowering them to make the decision on how quickly they want their car. And so we put that in their hands. It's also a huge customer service thing when you can say, hey, you know, is that you picked a 7-day model, it's day 6. Guess what? You know, yeah, it's gonna be picked up by day 7. That's our guarantee, that's what we're gonna do. But we aren't taking that phone call on day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5. You know, there's an expectation set. It goes back to being super transparent and just upfront and putting the choice in their hands. And so that's one of the things that we like to do with our clients, and we do. We have clients that just constantly pick the cost saver because that's their business model. I have clients that pick the 2-day pickup. That's their business model, period. And then I've got clients that spot buy based on what the actual buy is and where it's going to and from. So it's been a powerful tool for us to be able to provide that.
So your cheap and fast are the two?
Yeah,
that
you choose.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to choose. So.
But there was one of them, right?
Right, exactly.
I do like that feature. We use their software, as we were having a discussion earlier, and I do enjoy the ability to pick on price or time, because that really makes a big difference. Some customers, you know, it really depends on them. Run Buggy was another one that we were just looking at, and they were demoing their system for me earlier, and I mean, they have a very similar feature, and I think that that's great. It really empowers the person. Now, meeting those SLAs, I think, becomes a little bit more difficult, because if you pick the 2-day delivery and then it gets delivered in 3 days, you know, but you have a solution for that too.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. So one of the things, and I like to say this, and again, if you haven't figured out, I'm about transparency and how the industry works too, and that is anyone that guarantees you a delivery is making a false promise, because you cannot guarantee a delivery. A delivery is, it can move. Trucks break, snowstorms happen. I just had a guy who had a illness in the family. The truck driver had to fly home. They flew another truck driver in to take over. 2 days difference in delivery time. But the one thing I can guarantee, if you operate your business this way, is I can guarantee pickup date. And the way I can guarantee pickup date is because I'm scheduling that in advance, and if a failure occurs prior to pickup, I have a chance to recover and get another unit in there, another vehicle, another carrier in to make that pickup date. So that's our guarantee system, and our 2 and 7 days and everything works 100% on pickup. We're very upfront. We make sure our clients understand we're not trying to imply that is delivery. That is not delivery. It is 100% pickup. And then what we do is fairly simple, and it can cost us some money sometimes, but guess what? If I miss the 2-day pickup window, I lower your rate to the 7-day pickup window. So you don't pay for the service you didn't get. You pay for the service you did get.
Yeah, that works out really good, and I mean, as a person that uses the platform, I see the value in that, and then you feel like you get a win because you do get that discount right away.
Dana, anything to add to pricing options, software, service offerings?
Sure, you know, pricing. It really does make a difference. You know, there's only so many available spots on a carrier. So, you know, like John said, to get a car picked up in 2 days, it does take that extra amount. You know, the other car will move in 3 or 4 days, right? But to guarantee that pickup date, does take that extra couple bucks here and there. So it does make a difference.
There's a little bit more margin on the delivery date, because the auctions are usually have a gate open and they allow you to drop it off and it's secure. But the pickup time, especially in repo yards, right? We were talking about that. So.
Yeah, the little special nuances in the repo yards, which I always like to describe as, you have to make an appointment 24 hours in advance. You have to show up between 10 and 11. You have to wear pink socks. Ask for Rudy and don't stare him in the eye directly or we'll give him the car. So you really, those are the real tricky ones when it comes down to scheduling and timing. And it takes money to make that happen because it takes people to make those, coordinate all of that action. So that's an important part of this marketplace, and that's something that, again, being very upfront, really discussing and understanding what those requirements are and making sure that you and the customer are on the same page for how that's going to work. And then, as you guys know, there's certain yards that they're closed. I mean, they're open on Tuesday afternoon only. You miss Tuesday afternoon, you're waiting until next Tuesday. It's tough.
Sure, and that carrier bases his whole day around that pickup.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's not happy if he doesn't get there.
That whole day is based around that pickup. And then you can't reschedule for another 2 or 3 days. So that costs the client money because now they have to pay more money in storage fees and whatnot. So
there's generally a dry run fee too, right? When that happens, how do you handle that?
So, we're a little bit unique in that our relationships with our carriers are such, we typically do not utilize dry run fees on our carrier base. We do make exceptions. But the majority of the time, I'm actually able to reassign a carrier to another run that's close to what he was going to do and negotiate that away. So my customer doesn't incur a dry run fee either. We don't pay one, and my customer doesn't incur one. It does happen upon occasion. It's not always that way. If he's in the middle of Idaho and he ran 8 hours empty, he's going to want a little money if the car's not ready to go. So we do make exceptions. But in general, if you've got that relationship with the carrier base, you can pass that advantage along to your client and not charge them.
Sorry, Jay, now I feel like I was the one asking these guys the question.
Well, I like that. I like that. Well, that's the thing, is anybody confused? Anybody lost? Meaning, we've hit so many different points. We're just bouncing around like a pinball. Because there's so many factors that, dude, where's my car? I don't know, how long do you have?
The thing I say to people all the time when I tell them what I do for a living, they always say, God, I had no idea there was that involved. I didn't know there was that much that went into it. It's pretty complicated. A bit of business requires a great deal of professional knowledge. And it's interesting too, because the community of the business is such that a lot of people, we all kind of share our frustrations, cry our tears in our beer, so to speak, about what we all go through. Oh yeah, I had that happen. We joked about the bridge before, I had that happen. So.
And just the complexity in repossession for auto remarketers that are not prepared for all of those problems. Is that why freight forwarders, right? Let's have somebody else. Yeah,
for sure. In the repo space, it's a different animal. It's still transportation, but it's a different type of transportation, for sure. Because you don't know where the car is, right? In this situation, he guarantees pickup, right? And then really the other party that needs to be ready is the one to have the car ready to be picked up, right? Because a lot of times the carriers show up, the car is not ready. In the repo space, we don't know where the car is, so you got to visit 10 to 15 addresses to get the car. But that's just the repo space. The transportation space of that, it's really moving it from that yard, getting keys cut, because we're also moving it without keys, and getting keys cut and then getting it from there to the auction yard. That's probably the one that's closest to our topic that we're talking here. And that really gets complicated, because in my network alone, we have 430 agents, and each agent has 3 or 4 yards, and so then it's trying to figure out which yard the car is at that you got to go pick up, and then that's also where it gets a little bit more complex, because it's not always the same yard. And then you would think that cars generally go to the same auctions, but they don't, right? So there's the complexity in that as well.
So one car just turned into, I don't know how much time it took to figure out where it is, where's the keys.
Multiple touch points, for sure. Yeah, like I said, that's why I said I moved the same car a couple times. The first time you get it repossessed, sometimes you got to take it to a dealer to get a key, you got to bring it back, then you take it to an auction. I mean, there's multiple points in there for sure.
So before we get to a list of some of the costs and then what we would ask for help with, the problems we mentioned already existed, then the last 2 years, what new problems have occurred in the last 2 years we didn't have before?
Semiconductors, chips.
This is like a speed round. Yeah, we're gonna.
Yeah, it's semiconductors and chips. You know, that was a real monkey wrench into the overall picture of auto transport, or at least as far as we're concerned. And then, you know, some of the creative solutions that the OEMs came up with to try and work through that created some real interesting solutions. So for us, yeah, chips.
Okay, Dana, speed round, problems, last 2 years.
Well, I think the high volume of consumer deliveries, right? So it just kind of skyrocketed. And, you know, training the carrier base on what it takes to deliver a car to a consumer or pick a car up from a consumer. Because a lot of them had never done that before because of the chip shortage. And, you know, they're taking orders that they typically haven't taken before in the past. So there's no loads that they're picking up going to auction. It's a lot of onesie twosie picks. So, you know, kind of training on this on that new process and that new line of business.
Jose?
Yeah, for us, I think two things, right? It's compliance and technology, right? Because not everybody's on the same technology, and so that gets difficult. But the compliance associated with it. Everybody wants that pizza tracker, and if you did have that pizza tracker, I mean, the compliance associated with that. Taking pictures of the car, my car didn't have that scratch, where's that mirror, it had two sets of keys, like all the compliance of tracking all that, and then everyone trying to charge you back for different things. I think those are the two biggest challenges there for sure.
John?
I think off the bat, the carriers have really suffered. They're lacking parts. A lot of people, so they're trucks are parked on the side of the road because a part they used to pick up in 2 days is now 2 months out, so they can't get that truck back on the road. I recently heard from one of the large enclosed carriers in the U.S. that they had 20% of their vehicles parked right now due to part shortages, that they did not have an immediate anticipated plan to get them back on the road. So that in itself created a shortage of carriers. You also had carriers going offline just due to the COVID situation, due to them being sick themselves, family members being sick, being, you know, extremely sensitive to the environment, because this is in our world, it is a contact sport. So there is that going on a little bit. It's hard to do this without contact. So you had a lot of that going on as well. And then I think the other complexity we deal with, build on Dana's point a little bit, is that, you know, our markets changed, our carrier base 3, 4, 5 years ago, and historically is used to a 2-day window to do pickup and deliveries and calling and making all that stuff. And with the huge influx of consumer pickups and consumer deliveries, everybody wants that to happen like Comcast, right? They'll be there between 10 and 12 on Tuesday. And our carrier base is not used to dealing with 2-hour windows. That's just a fact. It's a whole retraining that we're gonna have to do for the entire industry, because that is not their game.
Which is why when we hear that, what was that G word, that guarantee?
Mm-hmm.
We guarantee we'll be there between 10 and noon. Really?
We literally keep a list carriers that qualify to meet that time frame, because they've done it and they've proven it and they've been able to meet that and they've met that higher standard, and they go on one list. And then we have carriers that we use on another list for where the time frame isn't that critical. And that's just two different levels of carrier in our system to manage. And we have to.
Smart.
So.
It is smart. Costs. What are some of the biggest cost problems we have in transportation?
Drivers. Manpower. Definitely one of the biggest considerations, and what's happening in the industry with manpower and the driver shortage, which has been going on for many years now, it's become extremely competitive to be able to keep qualified drivers at one place, almost to the point of cutthroat. And what's happened in auto delivery is that drivers are being sucked out of that space and put in, and going into, you know, freight box delivery, reefer, and all kinds of other industries. It's been a substantial challenge. So it's caused companies to really have to get creative on keeping their manpower, making sure that drivers are there and safe and happy, not going anywhere.
Dana?
You know, insurance is one of the key factors right now. So the rising insurance costs for these carriers, and you know, I'm going to speak about like a three-car Wedge. Their rates are through the roof. I mean, to the point where they can't afford it, and they really are the carriers that are moving a lot of the vehicles throughout the country right now. So motor truck cargo, it's tough to get a policy. I mean, the value of the vehicles they're moving are $80,000, $150,000, whatever it is. Regular freight cargo, you're moving $5,000 worth of freight. I mean, to get a motor truck cargo policy that will cover the value of the vehicles on that truck, it's not cheap. So these costs are starting to affect and push these carriers out of the market, which, you know, this has got to be some sort of solution to help them.
And the reason this is important is because what percentage of transportation carriers are single owner operator businesses?
Well, for a long time that was increasing, right? So, you know, as they go out, they were going on their own, creating a nice little source of income. But right now, we monitor insurance certificates on our carrier base, and on a daily basis, we're getting cancellation notifications. So, you know, these carriers have fallen to the wayside. They're going out of business as we speak. So, you know, with the driver shortage of these carriers falling off, it will, you know, the industry's going to get a little tougher before it does.
So it's an industry full of independent contractors?
There's quite a few out there.
Right.
Yeah. And we need them, you know, so especially when you look at all the new trade platforms and the retail, you know, to consumer platforms that are out there, they are the key factor to making these deliveries and pickups.
Jose?
Yeah, I echo the same thing. It's for sure the insurance and the fuel are the two things that drive our cost up.
John.
Yeah, it's really is amazing. I spend a lot of time in carrier forums and things like that on social media and kind of monitoring and seeing what the flavor of the week is and what everybody's talking about. Obviously, lately it's been fuel, but before that, literally the number one factor was just insurance. You guys, for those of you that aren't familiar with what they're paying, I mean, we're talking like $1,500, $2,500, $3,000 a month in insurance payments alone for a three-car Wedge, which is crazy. And if you think about that today, the marketplace is such that three-car guy and that five-car guy are more important than they ever have been, because the big company-owned 10 trucks, 10 carrier trucks, those are not, you know, guys aren't walking into Mannheim and buying 32 cars in the lane anymore. They're buying three off Backlot, they're buying two off ACV, they're buying one from Turn Automotive, they're buying another one on Carsker. Those kind of units have got to be picked up, one and two and three at a time, and those guys are critical to our industry, and we're pinching them right out. You watch these posts, and it's great. Some guy will say, hey, I'm thinking about getting into the industry. And he'll post that on one of these forums where there's like 3,000, you know, hot shots in there, right? And they'll all be like, are you nuts?
It's brutal.
Don't do it. So it's scary right now.
So what would we ask from clients, shippers, consigners, auctions, OEMs, if we could, what would we ask for?
I think transparency goes both ways. I think the thing that I always ask for is, what is your expectation? And you know, will you be willing to engage me in an honest discussion about what I can provide? I think that's the toughest part. And I think we're getting to that spot now with the way the capacity is where, you know, service and cost are kind of teetering. You know, whereas before, cost was a more heavily weighted factor, and now service is becoming more important. So the thing that I would ask for is that honest discussion about what is the real cost to do this job.
Dana?
You know, in a way, for the carrier base, you know, we need them to survive. I don't have a business without them. You know, I guess it's just kind of maybe showing them a little respect. Granted, you need to give respect to get respect, and you know, a lot of these guys do need to put a clean shirt on and kind of raise their game a little bit. But you know, the respect they get when they go to an auction and they spend 2 hours looking for a vehicle that you know, if maybe if someone drove them around or could locate that vehicle a little easier for them, they could get on the road and get moving to their next pickup, so they won't be late for that, you know, for that delivery on the sole vehicle that the dealership needs to have at their front line. So it is all connected. You know, so I think if respect is probably something that you know, we strongly believe that relationship with our carrier base needs to be solved.
Jose?
Not everything could be done better, faster, cheaper. And moving a car is definitely not going to be one of those things, especially if we get to EV vehicles and how much they weigh and the complexity of moving those. So I would just say that I think the banks, they really, they have all these people that help them do risk models on the front side on how much it's going to cost to finance that car for this amount of time, what the delinquency rate is going to be. And they got all that stuff dialed in. I mean, they really should take some of the same people and put them on the back and say, hey, what's a fair wage to pay someone to do this job with all of the variable costs that they have as well? And it's them really just not understanding all the components to getting that car moved, all the technology and everything else associated with it. So really it's just an education to get people to understand that you gotta pay a fair wage to move a car, because moving a car is not getting any less expensive.
John.
Well, I think in the industry, I think one of the things that's going on right now is there's a real mismatch between the variability of the transportation costs and what's going on, and the way that the industry, in a lot of cases, especially in the new car world, look at pricing, right? They want a pricing chart that here's five mileage bands. Give me the price per mile in each one of these bands, right? How hard is that to work with from our perspective when one car is going to Idaho and the other one's going to Manhattan and the prices are all over the place? It's just not that simple. You know, I mean, we're fortunate we use a pretty sophisticated algorithm to actually do real-time pricing, and that actually provides a price that it actually takes to move the vehicle that day. But I mean, I literally had a client the other day, no mileage bands at all, literally just what's your price per mile to move a car, an SUV, or a truck? Anywhere we want from this point in any direction. Well, you're not gonna get your best price that way, I'll tell you that, because I'm gonna protect myself and give you a pretty good price per mile in order to make sure that I'm not, you know, putting my carriers out of business and not able to pay my carriers. So we gotta match up somehow, guys, because it's we're off. We're on two different pages when it comes to how to do pricing like that.
That is a good point. Price per mile. When, where? Etc.
What season?
Right. In talking to some of the dealers of the software and analytics they have, you just made me think of, yeah, I came up with a term, transportation laboratory. You just made me think of that, Jose. Is that, yeah, we don't have the in-depth analysis on the transportation side that the dealers have on the sales side and vehicle acquisition side. So, and maybe we do. Just need to get the information out there or talk about it more. We're at Q&A. 16 plus minutes left. I have a few Q&A options written down, but I don't know, do we have the ability to open up? Oh, there's microphones. Wow, look at those things. There are microphones that you can walk up to and speak at, I guess. Or just shout it out. You can say one word, whatever it is. Otherwise, I'm going to go to a couple Q&A questions. I'm going to do that in 3, 2. All right, Joe.
All right.
I have your question. Otherwise, I'm going to read it. Thanks, Joe.
The problem is my head's exploding. I've got to get three questions.
Yeah.
And the mic doesn't appear to work.
Oh. That one? Thank you, Joe. We owe you, Joe. Joe Miller, everybody, online. Nice. Really forgot what I was going to ask you. Okay, so thank you all for sharing and being here and telling the story that needs to be told around this. I think it's such a fantastic example, case study, et cetera, of what a lot of the industry is facing right now. As we've been developing technology and business models like crazy, it's much easier to advance that technology, move it forward. Let's try the pizza tracker. We tried the pizza tracker. It just causes more problems, right? So thinking beyond just technology as a solution, now we're getting back to building trust again. This is the price, this is why the price is here, you have to trust me. That's boiling up from your carriers, you're relaying that message to your customers. I guess my question comes to, you've got the sophisticated technology that tells you what this move will cost. Not any move, not any this car in any location, no, this move, right? How do you build trust in your algorithms with your customers? It seems like that's the next big challenge. You know, your models, whatever that thing is, that black box. And I guess part of that is, how much do you trust that technology that's there that's spitting out that price?
Excellent question.
I'm a big fan of metrics. I look at them, I mean, literally every morning, the first thing I do is go through the KPIs for the business that I work in. And half the reason that that's done is to sense check and kind of answer your question about how do you know that you can trust your KPIs? Well, you look for those consistencies and variances. Explainable variances are exactly that. And so that is how you can ensure that you're looking at the right data and that, you know, that it's important enough to make the right decisions with. So kind of answer number one. With respect to that trust, this is a relationship business. You know, the carrier has a relationship to the customer at the origin point, has a relationship to the destination point. You know, ultimately, we're the ambassadors of an organization who are, you know, providing a service to provide the good that you need to be able to make your money. And so, you know, your track record follows you in that relationship. If you are repeatedly having problems, repeatedly failing to provide the service, that will follow you. And the companies that I've worked with over the years, the ones that are successful are the ones that, you know, bad news doesn't get better with time. They're the ones that say, hey, we had a problem, and this is what it's going to take to fix it, and, you know, and work through it. I found most of the time when I've called a destination and said, hey, something awful just happened, and here's what it is, here's what we're doing to fix it, we're accountable to it, we're going to take care of it, here's what we're going to do. Most of the time, that receiving end says, okay, thank you, I appreciate the call, keep me posted, most of the time.
I can give you two quick examples, Joe. I mean, we monitor our internal performance on that system pretty tightly, and it generally runs with about a 95% accuracy rate. So 5% of the time, I'm off, and it's wrong. I'm still guaranteed. I manage that on our end as a business. It's a business decision to do. The other thing we do is we'll do calibration sessions with our clients. So we'll be completely transparent. I literally had a client call me Monday and say, JR, I'm really curious. He says, I had this job with another carrier, who will remain nameless, and they had it for a week, and I gave it to them for $468, and they couldn't get it moved. He said, I went back into your system. Your system said it was $579. He said, you got it picked up in 2 days. How much did you pay the carrier? I said, I paid the carrier $500. I told him. I showed him the paperwork. We paid $500, and we made $79 on that move. He said, you mean to tell me that for $32, the other guy wouldn't move it for a $32 loss? And I said, yeah, apparently so. And we work on an operational basis that at the end of the day, I look at the overall margin on the account, not on the job. And our teams focus on working on meeting that, what we call NLT, no later than date. That's our date that we've guaranteed. That's what my team's incentivized on. They're not incentivized on making money. So it's a little different business model. Knock on wood, it's been working so far, so we're going to keep it going.
So follow on question to that, because I think that goes to the other piece of trust and relationship, which is dealing with the carriers, right? So it might also be that the carrier, your network was more motivated to work for you because of the way you treat them or whatever it is. Could that be?
I think that's a key component, Joe. I mean, you just hit on something super huge, and I've said this probably 100 times in the last 3 months. You know, any carrier you want to talk to, especially, you know, asset light, it doesn't come for Joe, of course, but for those of us that are asset light, which is a nice way now that we say that we're a broker, just everybody recognize that. So for us brokers, you know, when we say we have somewhere between 15 and 20,000 carriers in our database, well, guess what? That's like saying I know 500,000 people because I have a phone book and I have all their names, right? That's how many carriers are on Central Dispatch. Come on, guys. That's not a real number. The number is, ask the next question when you're shopping carriers. Ask them, what percentage of the moves do they make on what percentage of the carriers that they have? Because that's carrier relationships. So last year, we haven't calculated it for this quarter. As we come up, we'll calculate it again for the quarter. But last year we moved 90% of all of our units went on less than 500 carriers that we work with on a regular basis. We're proud of that. So when somebody says to me, how many carriers do you have? Sure, I'll say, technically, you want to know how many in my database? I actually have 22,000. I'm not using all of them. There's a lot of bad ones. There's a lot of guys that I don't want anything to do with. I'm going to my 500 guys. That's where I'm going. I shop as little as we can possibly shop. And that's what everybody should be doing in this business, and all of us are. We're trying to build those relationships with carriers, and that's why when Dana talks about this, you know, pretty passionately about the carriers and taking care of carriers, we do. I'm going to take care of my 500 guys.
Good segue. So one more question, Jay, I promise.
I love it.
And to the two guys in the middle, those handsome fellas, you guys both have I've heard you talk this week. There's a little bit of mention of the importance of the onesie twosies right now. And I think you guys both have some secret sauce around that. I'm wondering if you can share any of that, because that seems like a tough part of the job right now.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, for us, it's pretty unique. We do a lot of moves catastrophe areas. So whenever there's a hurricane or a big flood that comes through, having the one car hauler is very handy because they could get into neighborhoods, apartment complexes, they could get into tight spaces, grab those cars, pull them out, and you know, get them delivered where they gotta go. So that makes my carrier network very unique as it relates to that. Then, you know, when catastrophes happen, repo stops, so then it allows me to repurpose those trucks also. I mean, everybody's coin operated, right? So they, as long as you're putting coins in and you're feeding them work, then, you know, it helps win favor later on when you need something. So that's kind of awesome.
For us, the ones and twosies, that's the industry right now. You know, like it was mentioned earlier, there's not a dealer going to an auction that's going to buy 10, a truckload of vehicles. They're going to buy one car from this auction. They're online. They're going to buy another car from another auction. It's the industry is all ones and twos moves, you know, throughout the nation. And now you've got the customer deliveries on top of that. You know, that's the model going forward. And it takes, you know, to deliver on a solid service to build that trust with the carrier and the end customer.
As the asset heavy, I'll say, but I mean, everything I've heard from everybody else, I think, which boils down to this, every morning we wake up and we put together a puzzle. What pieces that you use, whether it's, you know, in my case, my own assets, or in another case, owner operators and brokerage, or, you know, really, each morning we wake up, take a look at the landscape, put together that puzzle, and try and figure out what's the best and fastest and most efficient, cost-effective way provide the best service that we possibly can.
Which doesn't sound altogether too efficient or easy.
No.
Thus, the complicated pizza tracker. Fuel surcharges gets talked about. We have 5+ minutes, so we'll plug and fill it with fuel surcharges.
Yeah, that's an issue that we saw this kind of rear its head about 10 years ago or so, really became a big issue and kind of tapered off, and now it's back to become a big issue. You know, in the new and OEM world, fuel surcharge is a static thing. It's part of a contract. You sign up for it. It's very mechanical. Not necessarily always favorable, but it's extremely mechanical. But the reason it's done that way is because otherwise you'd have these OEMs at the mercy of, well, fuel just went up by X percent, here's your price increase, or else. You know, so obviously, you know, the spice must flow, so they put that together in that fashion. But, Used car space is a little different. You know, you have a little bit more flexibility. You know, and again, that boils down to a relationship that you have with the shipper, what you're able to sustain, what you can back up, and what you can move with.
Personally, we have not put a fuel surcharge on yet with a lot of our customers, which we do have a lot of customers with set rates for, you know, set lanes that they do, or just constant moves. I guess we're just looking to maybe have this set a little bit before we put it in. So right now we're taking the brunt of it on our part because the carrier base does demand a higher rate to move these vehicles just to survive.
We sent out a mandatory letter to all our customers that we were doing a fuel surcharge, and we did it on a flat rate because I think it was easier to manage. Although, to his point, I mean, the bands don't work. I mean, giving somebody an extra $25, you know, per pickup in California versus, you know, I don't know, in Kansas, right? It's two different things. But yeah. We did it flat because it was the easiest way to manage. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily the right way.
Was that a flat joke about Kansas? Because I'm from Kansas, so. Yeah.
In our case, it's great because it's built into the algorithm, so it goes up. As it needs to go up in order to take care of the carriers to meet the demand, because that's what we're assessing all the time, is what that rate is. The other thing that it does, which is, I think, is always the biggest fear in any fuel surcharge world, is when does it go back down? And because of the way our math works, it's going to automatically go back down when the fuel goes back down. So it's really built into the whole program. So.
Right, that gets into pricing transport accurately. Today, tomorrow, it's like a stock market. I mean, it can go up, go down.
Well, we used a flat, just like Jose said, we used a flat basis on our ad hoc moves as well. I mean, it works. It's simple. It's explainable. You know, you can show the math. Price went from X to X plus. Here's an out of pocket. You know, so that's what we did too, for what's worth.
Expectations with EV. Everybody wants to know what you expect.
They're heavier. That's a challenge because we're constrained into what we can haul and what the weight is like. So that means it will be harder to move the same amount of volume with the same amount of fleet. The hope is that we'll be able to mix that with internal combustion, and hopefully it will minimize the impact. The market will tell, you know, how much the demand is for. You know, how much the demand splits between internal combustion and fleet. But make no mistake, EV is coming. It's a matter of time before it works its way into pretty much every segment of new and remarketed vehicles.
Yeah, weight being one of the biggest factors right now. You take one of these cars, in some cases they're 1,000 pounds heavier than a typical car. So, you know, you've got weight restrictions on these trucks that they can only haul up to, you know, 10 car, 80,000 pounds. Well, that puts them at an 8-car, you know, 8 to 9-car limit. And if they're moving 8 EVs, now they're down to 6 or 7 units. So it does become a big factor that raises the price to move that freight.
I think with those EV cars, there's a lot going on there that we don't, I mean, we haven't even talked about, right? All the sensors on those cars are on the bumpers. So if you bump the bumpers, I mean, you've completely damaged the car. You know, what if the car isn't charged? How do you pull it up there? Do you wait 30 minutes to charge it so that then you can move it? I mean, there's specialty equipment if they're sports cars and they're lower to the ground to get it up on the truck. I mean, I think that just adds this whole level of complexity. I mean, not even to mention the keys. How do you get keys for these? So that's going to be different too. So it's too much for me to think about at the moment.
We're literally setting up EV certified carriers in our system because there are so many complex levels of what's going on with an EV that we haven't even touched on yet. Whether it's, you know, I remember the first time I marshaled a couple hundred Teslas back in the day when they first came out, and we killed about 50 batteries. Did you know if you leave the keys in those, it actually draws the battery? So there's just little things like, I'm sure they've fixed it since then, but this was years and years ago. And once that battery is dead, it was dead back then. You had to actually replace it. It was an expensive little lesson. But there's that kind of thing. There's the whole sensor thing. There is the issue of the weight, there is the issue of, did you know how you jumpstart those is completely different. So when you do need to jump one, it's completely different. So you've got to have a driver, you've got to have a carrier that knows how to move an EV, not just from the weight perspective, but all the little nuances and all the little things that happen. So it's going to be tricky.
We do have one more question, and then we're going to wrap it up.
I'm going to run all the way back.
Second microphone. Nothing's easy.
Okay. So I know we've talked about like this pizza tracker and the complications that go into GPS tracking. I've also talked to like a number of carrier companies that also prefer not to call their drivers while they're on the road because those might be seconds or minutes of distraction or eyes off the road. So my question, I guess, to you guys is, with consumer expectations, as you guys mentioned earlier, not necessarily always aligning with the reality of how auto transport actually works, have any of you dreamt of a solution to either educating consumers to, I don't know, mitigate those expectations, or is there anything in terms of software that you wish existed to assist in place of this pizza tracker?
I think you can go right back into compliance and a lot of those things. So we had a software that would route a lot of the drivers for us and create the most efficient route, although that's like the salesman's problem that they're always trying to solve is, you know, the route efficiency. So your question was, you know, we have a lot of wasted minutes and get a hold of that driver, and how do you make it more efficient? And you know, I'm not sure that there's a great solution, but if you guys ever look inside of a truck, I mean, they got these big screens, they got headsets going. I mean, so these guys are a little bit distracted anyway. I'm not sure that I have a 100% answer. We've been trying to figure that out. When we were fleet heavy, we had about 350 vehicles, and we tried to put technology in it, but then now you have a guy who's not even just a driver, but now he needs to learn how to use all these pieces of technology and how to create the routes and how to use the camera and how to do all these things. And so then it just became that much more expensive to even hire a driver, because now you're not just hiring a driver, you're hiring someone who also knows how to use technology. So it's not just a blue collar job anymore. It's a, you know, a blue and a, you know, skilled labor. I don't know if that answered your question.
It's a hard question.
I can give a little insight, you know, from that standpoint on the fleet side. You'll hear me say a million times over how important relationships are in this business. Well, the relationship between the company and the driver, in this case, is the answer to your question. Because then the driver's managing the expectation of the company, saying, I can't get there by 4 o'clock today, boss. They can make it. It's raining, you have traffic, you know, dog ate my homework, whatever it is. But I'll be there tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, bright and early, bells on, you know, communicating that expectation, then back to the customer, as we said in an earlier question. That's what we do. You know, you can't remove the person from the equation. It's not a robot delivering the car. It's a human being that is going to sit there and say, yes, I can make it, or no, I cannot.
I want to thank you for your question. I really do appreciate it. Joe, thank you for your question. Really appreciate that as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your participation. Please give me a round of applause for Joe Bricardi, Daniel Rogers, Jose Delgado, John Robertson, and the Transportation Conversation. I'm going to hand it over to my friend Charlie Vogelheim. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Great job. So just a quick housekeeping. We've got two more concurrent.